Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is Oscar time, Sunday night, 2 days to go. With 10 nominees up for Best Picture this year and a new voting system, it's a tough night to predict. Hollywood took on some big themes this year, from war in Avatar, The Hurt Locker, and Inglourious Basterds, to quite different takes on African-American struggle in The Blind Side and Precious, unemployment with George Clooney in Up in the Air, and of course, the wild cards, Jewish suburban life in A Serious Man, Pixar's old man adventure flick, Up English Girl Comes of Age in An Education, and Aliens in Johannesburg in District 9. This hour On Point, the Oscars 2010. You can join the conversation. What are your top Oscar picks? Did Hollywood hit the right notes this past year? And what movie moments will you remember? We'd be glad to hear from you as well on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Two terrific critics with us today. From Philadelphia, Carrie Rickey, longtime film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Carrie, welcome. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be here.
And with me in the studio is Wesley Morris, movie critic for the Boston Globe. Mr. Morris, we're glad you're here.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks, and hello. Man. So let's go straight to it with you two, just so we have you on the record. Avatar or Hurt Locker or something else? Carrie, first to you. Best Picture.
Very complicated year. For the first time since 1943, 10 Best Picture nominees.
Yeah.
And a new voting system. It's not the movie that gets the most votes on the ballot, not a movie that gets the plurality of votes. It's got to get a majority. It's a what they call a preferential ballot.
You mean sort of keep voting until somebody gets a majority, I guess.
Keep balloting until someone gets a majority. I'll explain it later.
Okay. But let us know where you come down. Best Picture. Let's just get it out there. We'll hear from listeners. We'll hear from Wesley. Where are you on Best Picture? If you were king, queen.
If I were king, I would make it a four-way tie. Avatar, Hurt Locker, Up and Up in the Air. I think those are the four movies that spoke to me most.
Four-way tie. Movie critics don't get to do that, do they? Don't you have to decide how many stars?
Well, when there's 10 movies, you kind of...
There's 10 movies. Yeah. It's too hard.
10
I'm
movies?
Sorry.
Too hard. Wesley, we'll hear from you. Avatar, giant this year. Giant money spent on it. Giant money coming in from it. Humans arrive on this Earth-like moon, Pandora. The year is 2154. The RDA Corporation is mining for a very valuable mineral, unobtainium. Ooh, that's subtle. Putting them in conflict with the native population, the Na'vi.
We have an indigenous population of humanoids called the Na'vi. They're fond of arrows, dipped in a neurotoxin that'll stop your heart in 1 minute. And they have bones reinforced with naturally occurring carbon fiber. They are very hard to kill.
The Na'vi. Well, excuse me. Wesley Morris, where are you coming down on Best Picture?
Four-way
tie? I mean, don't tell me four-way tie.
No, I think that the best of these 10 movies, I'm with Carrie in the sense that there are a number of movies that are very good. To pick one, I would, you know, what they do is they rank the ballots. And so in keeping with what the Academy would probably do in ranking my ballot, I would probably say my preference would be Precious, The Hurt Locker, Avatar, and Up would be my fourth one. And then, you know...
Is that what everyone does? Those who vote, give their top...
You have to correct me if I'm wrong, Carrie, but you have to vote all 10 movies.
And so the movie
on the bottom is the one you want least to win, and the movie at the top is the one you'd most like to win.
And so then they feed it into a computer that weighs all that up, or then come back...
This is actually manual.
Yeah,
and
they count everything
by
hand.
They make 10 piles.
Yeah.
They're making 10 piles. The movie that gets the most first place votes has the biggest pile, and the movie that with the least votes, they take that pile away and they assign the number two votes and redistributed them to the other nine piles. And when one movie gets, I think it's 2,877 votes, which is half the votes cast.
Okay.
When one movie gets that, it wins.
And remind us one more time, who's voting here, Wesley?
It is the nearly 6,000 or just over 6,000 members of the Motion Picture Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, which is a trade group, basically. I mean, it's actors, technicians, directors, producers, a couple other random people. But it is not critics. It is not the public. It is not, you know, it is movie industry professionals.
Is it most of the people we sitting in that hall on Oscar night? Most of them have voted.
Many of them are Academy members, yes.
Okay, well, let's just take on, we'll hear from Hurt Locker in just a moment. But a lot of people are saying Avatar versus Hurt Locker, it's got a great backstory because it's James
Husband
Cameron.
Husband and wife.
Ex-husband, ex-wife, Catherine Bigelow. But what about Avatar? I mean, what do you make of this movie? Carrie, first to you. I mean, huge money spent on it, $2 billion taken in from it, biggest ever in absolute dollar terms. What do you make of this movie?
I think it's what they call a space western. It's in outer space. It adheres to the plot points of movies like Dances with Wolves.
The guy dropped in with the natives turns out to be a central character.
It's a cavalry versus the tribe movie, and it's a very familiar American story. But the visuals take us to some place we've never been. We're surrounded by them. I felt that I was in another world.
3D and really rocking.
I felt transported because the main figure is quadriplegic at the beginning and can't walk. When he slips into his avatar and starts running around on this
foreign
planet.
His virtual reality, virtual body.
I was in his shoes. And
I mean, you're running with him, and that's a very exhilarating moment. I mean, and the movie keeps that going for two more hours.
I thought the story was okay, but the thing that did stand out to me at the end of it, I could feel my adrenaline up because of that. You're running with them.
No, really. I mean, it's a really
and you're soaring with them when they get on their those beasts are called.
You're flying.
Pegasi.
I mean, it's a real achievement in terms of how a movie can make you feel.
But in terms of being dismissed as a kind of 3D cartoon?
No, I don't buy that. I mean, I think the people who level that criticism, they're not really watching the movie, or their eyes are closed or something. I don't understand that. I mean, you can argue with it narratively, sure. But as a movie going experience,
I was physically involved with it.
Yes, and that doesn't happen very often.
Engaged in a new way, maybe a new horizon for filmmaking in general. Hurt Locker goes to a very different place, right down on the ground. 2004, Iraq. The movie follows an elite bomb defusing American military unit, Bravo Company. Army Sergeant William James, that's Jeremy Renner playing, joins the team after the previous tech leader was killed. Here's a scene where after defusing a bomb in the trunk of a car that just minutes before was on fire, Sergeant James is praised by Colonel Reed, David Morse.
You're the guy in the flaming car, Sergeant James?
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. You're a wild man, you know that?
Yes, sir.
He's a wild man, you know that? Why don't you shake your hand?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. How many bombs have you disarmed?
I'm not quite sure, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes.
Ask your question.
873.
873.
They're counting today, sir. Yes.
That's got to be a record. What's the best way to go about disarming one of these things?
The way you don't die, sir.
That's a good one. That's spoken like a wild man. That's good.
What's the best way? The way you don't die, sir. And I'm taken right back there to Robert Duvall and God, I Love the Smell of Napalm in the Morning. I mean, it almost seems deliberate. Carrie Rickey, Catherine Bigelow puts it out there. This is in so many ways the opposite of Avatar. This is down on the ground.
They're both war movies, but they both engage you viscerally. I was with this movie. I was in the feet of Jeremy Renner's feet and his weird space suit. And this movie has an incredible metaphor for the war. The IED diffuser thinks he's gotten it, thinks he's done, and all of a sudden he reaches down and there's an octopus, a tangled octopus of wires below.
To a whole lot more bombs.
To a lot more explosives, and it's the perfect metaphor for this war, isn't it? You know, we think we're done. We're not done.
You know, before you see it, you think, well, you're going to feel sorry for this guy, but you realize, Wesley, I mean, he's become a thrill junkie, an adrenaline junkie in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I like that scene, the clip you just played. I think it really sets up the William James character. And David Morse keeps calling him this wild man. Oh, you're a wild man. Oh, I love that.
And that's the best thing he could possibly call. You've got to be wild.
But he doesn't play the part of a wild man. He does not sort of perform this job. This is a very personal thing for him. It's a very intimate thing for him, this bomb defusal situation. And I think that, I mean, one of the brilliant things about this movie is the way in which it does not sort of trump up and beef up this job. It is a job. Mm-hmm. And this guy is very good at it, and he gets a charge out of it. But it's not – he has a pathological need to do it. But that pathological need is not the thing that you normally get from a movie like this. I mean, Catherine Bigelow made a movie called Point Break, for instance, mm-hmm. which is all about the thrill of – these of surfing and, mm-hmm. and
bank robbing,
and bank yep. robbing, the high of these things. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really give you the high in the way that she normally does. The high is very personal for him, and the filmmaking renders that sort of terrifying for people who aren't him.
Carrie, is that the hand? I don't want to stereotype here. Is that the hand of the woman director in a more subtle direction here? Is it a woman's take on war?
It was written by a man, Mark Boal, from mm-hmm. his dispatches. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to say it's a collaboration. But mm-hmm. I think that Bigelow has always been very good at first-person point of view in her movies. She really gets you in the skin of her characters.
It is intense.
And I don't know whether that's a particularly female trait, but I will say that her ex-husband, Jim Cameron, is better at the explosions and the CGI mm-hmm. than she is.
But
she really likes real people and in real time.
She's got real fans for the Hurt Locker this year. Carrie Rickey with the Philadelphia Inquirer, Please Stand By, and Wesley Morris with the Boston Globe. We're looking at the movies and the actors in the Oscar race this year. We'll go out with a little Avatar music. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about the movies and the actors in the Oscar race, who's hot, what's not, and what you make of Hollywood's nominees this year. Here's a little bit from Inglourious Basterds, written and directed by Quentin Tarantino, a team of American soldiers out on a mission to terrorize Nazis. Brad Pitt is their good old boy commanding officer.
My name is Lieutenant Aldo Rain, and I'm putting together a special team, and I need me 8 soldiers. 8 Jewish American soldiers. Now, y'all might have heard rumors about the Armada happening soon. Well, we'll be leaving a little earlier. We're going to be dropped into France dressed as civilians. Once we're in enemy territory, as a bushwhacking guerrilla army, we're going to be doing one thing and one thing only. Killing Nazis. Sound good?
Yes, sir!
Yes, sir. Carrie Rickey is with us from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Wesley Morris, film critic at the Boston Globe. Inglourious Basterds, Wesley, what'd you make of it?
I have a lot of problems with this movie. I love Quentin Tarantino. I find it really amazing that this movie was as successful as it was. Not so much because it's bad. It's not bad. It's just that I'm the scope of this movie is really interesting. I think that it has a lot of good parts. But I think people really got behind it because there's a fantasy dimension to this that hasn't been true in a World War II movie before.
You mean the revenge of the Jews?
There's a revisionism here that's kind
not
of...
Not exactly. How about, not Munich, Defiance last year. We've seen
well,
it last
right,
year
but I mean,
Defiance.
I think that this is a much more direct, like, you know, this is
yes.
dropping the bomb pretty much on the, you know, at ground zero. You know what I mean? I mean, I think
yes.
that Tarantino decides to go full on and just do what the other movies can't really do because they're bound by the historical record.
So, Carrie Rickey, if there were not 10 slots this year, first time since 1940, whatever, on the Best Picture, would it be on the list if there were 5?
I don't know.
I would say yes.
Who decides, by the way?
What?
The voters of the Academy.
They also vote on who makes the top 5 or top 10.
They nominate.
10. Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the guilds nominate the individual categories. Like the actors nominate the actors.
Mm-hmm.
And the composers nominate the score nominees. And everybody nominates the Best Picture. So all the members of the Academy, that's the one category they all nominate.
I mean, I liked Inglourious Basterds. It was fun. It was even moving sometimes. But best, you know, super great. Best picture.
You know, I have to say that, you know, I have two feelings about this. One of which is I feel like these 10 movies tell a really interesting story about the year that was 2009. I think that Inglourious Basterds, to me, was maybe the most surprising hit of that year, mostly because I felt like the public had sort of given up on Tarantino. But they came back and embraced him. And this was also a critically lauded movie as well, which also surprises me. I mean, it got is a lot of strong critical support. And to see the Academy, the public, and the critics sort of get behind this movie is a real testament both to Harvey Weinstein's pushing it and Tarantino's staying power and his ability to really entertain an audience on many different
levels.
It
is certainly vivid. I want to get to our listeners. Nashville, Matt, you're on the air, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to comment on the Hurt Locker Avatar scenario because I think it's probably the most viable to make it to Best Picture.
Okay.
I've seen them both. And I think it comes down to the Academy voting on, is it going to be a revolutionary movie? Because I think Avatar is kind of in the same vein as The Matrix or Star Wars, where it was just kind of never been done before, never been seen before, a whole new world. And versus The Hurt Locker, which obviously there's been a lot of war movies made, this is obviously a different take, a different view on the movie. But overall, I think was a better picture. It had better, the acting was very solid, the plot was very solid, cinematography was great. I mean, overall, I think it's all-encompassing a much better picture.
Let me get, we've got it, Matt, in Nashville. Let's get some more votes in here. Sarasota, Florida. Thank you, Matt. Jonathan in Sarasota, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. First-time caller. I like the wanted to comment on the movie Avatar. I think that there, like you're like one of your guests, that there are a lot of Americanized themes in there. Like if you compared, you could almost compare it to Pocahontas. You know, Jonathan Swift meets Pocahontas. Pocahontas, you know, gets in a fight with the father. It's very similar to that. I did notice that a lot of the people that I was talking to didn't catch a lot of the themes of our destructive nature, and I think the movie capitalizes on our destructive natures and anger at our destructive natures. And I just wanted to see if the other two guests thought that as well.
I will ask them, Jonathan. I promise. Let me get one more caller first. Sydney, Harvard, Massachusetts. Sydney, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment was I thought that Avatar was a really luscious movie, and then it left a horrible aftertaste.
Why?
Well, here again, it's the white guy who comes, and he does a better job at being native than the natives.
Ain't that something?
And he does that with submachine guns or something at the end. So that was my problem with it.
All right, Sydney, thanks very much for calling. Carrie, Wesley, there's your...
May I respond to Sydney?
Yeah. Yes, please.
For me, it wasn't that the white guy did a better job being a Navi than the Navi. The American did a better job understanding how to defeat American armaments.
Oh, that's true.
Than the Navi.
Yes.
That's how I interpret it. But I do believe that at a time that we're engaged in war, it's interesting to have this kind of anti-war movie, very critical of American methodology. I also think it's interesting that of the 10 nominated movies, 3 are war movies.
Time of War. I mean, not surprising in that way. And Iraq has not had much attention up at this level, that's for sure, cinematically.
That's true.
Carrie, I don't know if you had this experience when you saw it the first time, but I don't know how many times you've seen it either. But the first time I watched it, I thought it was I had a great time, but I was by the end of the movie, during the big battle sequence, I was shocked by how viscerally I was responding, not necessarily even in a positive way, to this choice that Cameron makes to pit the Navi against, you know, sort of para ex American military. It really feels like an insurgency. It is an insurgency, but it feels beyond. It feels extra narratively insurgent.
And this from a big money movie maker.
That's very fascinating about Avatar. Wesley, I absolutely agree. When a certain character dies, a certain American character dies, I don't want to spoil it, I started weeping. And I just thought, why?
It's a really, really interesting... I mean,
politically
I don't buy this... Yes. You cannot dismiss this movie as just being a piece of fantasy. There are too many amazingly interesting things, a lot of which I have a problem with. But, I mean, I like that they're there. I like that we can fight about these things. It's not a movie you can just write off as being...
It's expressly critical of corporate America.
Yeah. It's expressly critical of a lot of things.
What? Critical in terms of economic systems, in terms of environmental issues, in terms of war, politics.
You got it.
Who's on top? I mean, it's really loaded for a $2 billion giant, giant money film.
And I will also... Can I just say one thing really quickly, Tom? I love the fact that at the center of this movie is not a love story, but a very strong woman... And the last shot of one of the last shots of that movie of her holding him is one of the most beautiful, slightly erotic things I've seen in a movie.
Hey, call me shallow. I dug the love story, tales included. Ian in Columbia, South Carolina. Ian, you're on the air.
Hi, it's actually Eon.
Eon, nice to have you. Eon?
Yeah, hi, how you doing? I just want to call and make a comment on Inglourious Basterds. I think you guys have said that you didn't consider it one of the main contenders in this race.
Oh, I think it could probably win based on this voting system. It could be a huge upset, but I mean, it could happen.
Yeah, the Nazis might win the Navis.
Oh, boy.
No, I just think that I know that we're, you know, contending with some very amazing movies. I mean, Avatar was certainly stunning in everything it did. But I think something Inglourious Basterds did that these other movies didn't is that Tarantino always pushing his view on the world just a little bit farther and making it almost outlandish, but at the same time, very, very compelling. You know, the whole opening scene with the Beethoven entry and that Nazi Inquisition was, I think, the most horrifying scene I saw in a movie in years. And you contrast it with how fun it becomes to see the American soldiers going through this revenge fantasy. I just think it was a real gem of Tarantino, and I would like to see it win.
Maybe a good point for us to look at the best, where are we, best supporting actor side of things here. Because you had, help me here, Christoph Waltz as the Nazi interrogator.
Christoph Waltz. Christopher Plummer. I mean, you know.
Christopher Plummer in The Last Station. I just saw that. I thought it was terrific.
Call me old-fashioned. It's a real act-a-thon, that one.
I actually like The Last Station. I think it's a very fascinating movie.
I like it.
It's a story of Tolstoy.
It's a lot.
And his death, and a lot.
And Tolstoy, the first celebrity stalked by paparazzi of his time.
Yes, with their big flash cameras on tripods and all the rest way back when. I mean, there's a little Dr. Zhivago feeling there, and I don't know what else, but it's a way back machine. But to see what Captain, what's his name, from The Sound of Music, now...
Von Trapp.
Captain
Von Trapp, of course. Eons later, speaking of eons, as Tolstoy at his death. It was remarkable performance, I thought.
He's the person I would pick to win of these five.
This is the best supporting actor. Yes. He's up against Matt Damon.
I think Plummer is the best actor, but I don't believe he'll win. I believe Christoph Waltz will win because I think the Academy wants to acknowledge Inglourious Basterds, and that's a way to acknowledge it.
Sorry, Carrie.
Go on.
I was just going to say that in response to what Ion said about what he loved about Inglourious Basterds, I think that, you know, between Christoph Waltz and that sort of the pleasure that he got out of the fantasy of watching these guys move from this one horrific sequence to this sort of rollicking adventure fantasy was sort of what I found distasteful about the movie in a way. And it only really comes to a head for me in the final sequence. I'm noticing more that Tarantino was not a very good lateral storyteller up until that point. But the final sequence just really, really, it really disappointed me. It's both too much and something I don't really think Tarantino excels at, which is mass extermination.
Over the top.
It's way over the top. It's a little too cartoonish for me. And I did not feel that visceral catharsis given what's happening. I was more sickened and disappointed by the sort of, appropriate, like, you know, behaving
theater,
the way the Nazis would behave.
And Nazis.
I mean, it just...
We've got so much to look at. I want to go in a different direction, if you'll permit me here. Precious, the story of Clarice Precious Jones, overweight, pregnant, pretty much illiterate African-American teenager in Harlem. Mary, her abusive mother, played by Monique, stops by at a session with the social worker. And here Precious, it's Gabrielle Sibide, listens as her mother, Monique, tries to show she cares about her.
And me and Carl, we love Precious. And you need to know that we love Precious and we had dreams. Precious was born around the same time Miss West's son got killed. The summertime. She was born the summertime. Remember that?
I was born in November.
November. Yeah. That's right.
Summertime, November, whatever. it really matters to Precious. Wesley Morris, what about this film? Monique, everybody loves her performance. What about the whole thing?
The movie is great, I think. I mean, I'd be interested to know how Carrie feels about it. I think this is a rare American movie that actually puts you inside the life of one black girl. I mean, it is not a metaphor for all black people. There's no way to mm-hmm. extrapolate that this is a story about black life. Mm-hmm. I feel like it tells you the story of this one girl, her horrible mother, her bad life, and her determination to not succumb to the undertow of awfulness that could easily drag her under and drown her.
One girl that this society walks by every day.
Every day. I mean,
And this movie mm-hmm. really makes the viewer start to look at people that they haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very powerful part of the movie. But there's two parts of Precious. There's mm-hmm. the movie and there's the backlash. To talk about the movie, I think it shows Precious's mother, Mary, in an amazing performance by Monique, mm-hmm. where her eyes are dead, her body is slack. She's a monster like Hannibal Lecter. Mm-hmm. But it shows how her illiterate mother can't tell her story, and it shows Precious's drive to literally and figuratively write her own story and define herself. So that's very, very emotionally
powerful. The backlash is Precious herself standing up.
The backlash is that, I believe, for some in the African-American audience, is why do we get movie... Why is Monique going to win this award for playing an abused and abusive woman when African-American people don't win for playing leaders? African Americans win for playing Denzel Washington Training Day, who's another kind of monster. African Americans win when they play servile people like Whoopi Goldberg or Louis Gossett Jr. And I think that's a separate issue, but that is coloring the backlash.
Wesley Morris,
what do you think?
It's your part of the American pie. What do you say?
It's an interesting conversation. You know, I've been thinking since this movie came out, since I saw it last January of 2009. Mm, It's been with me in a lot of ways, and I feel like one of the things that you think about, and just in terms of the Oscars specifically, what black people win their awards for. I mean, you could sort of look across it. They're for a gamut of things. I do think that what's interesting to me about Precious is that it gives you two types of women who exist in American film history: large, dark-skinned black women who aren't career women. They, one is a teenager, so she hasn't had a chance to do anything. Mm. And that's sort of an important point to make, too. But these are physical archetypes of American movie making that have never or rarely been given a narrative unto themselves. Now,
opposed to a bit part in
As opposed to Pearl Bailey coming on and singing a song, as mm-hmm. opposed to Hattie McDaniel sort mm-hmm. of helping Scarlett O'Hara. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it goes on back to the beginning of movie history. I think that the negative response in terms of to this movie, in terms of what it's purportedly saying about black American life and black American families and who it was made for, whether it was made for a white audience or whether it was made for a black audience. Mm. I mean, these are really interesting questions to have. I just don't know whether it's fair to lay them at the feet of this movie. I think this movie was not made for a white audience. I think that its resonance brought a white, and Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry sort of beating its drum brought white audiences in. But it also says a lot to me that, again, in the same way that Inglourious Basterds has sort of been embraced by different levels of the movie-going, movie industry communities, this movie has also sort of been embraced by a number of different types of people and factions.
We'll come back and look at the flip side, maybe the blind side, with Sandra Bullock, no less. Wesley Morris with me in the studio here from the Boston Globe. Carrie Rickey in Philadelphia with The Inquirer. It's great to have you with us. A little soundtrack here from Jeff Bridges and Crazy Heart behind us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I've been to China and to Peru. I'm only trying to get a hold on you. I'm only trying to get a hold on you.
We're talking about the movies and the actors in the Oscar race this year. Who's hot, what's not, and what you make of Hollywood's nominees. Carrie Rickey is with us from the Philadelphia Inquirer and Wesley Morris, film critic for the Boston Globe. Michael in Buffalo, New York. You're on the air, Michael.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Carrie and Wesley. I think I've solved the riddle of how these particular 10 films were selected. You know, the Motion Picture Academy was founded as a promotional group, and each of these 10 films is from a different studio.
Oh.
No studio has two nominees among the best films. The only studios that were locked out were Universal, which really hasn't produced anything of any value last year, and Miramax, which is really just disgorging old leftover product.
But something for everyone who stepped up just a little, sort of spread the wealth here, spread the glory, you think, Michael?
Everyone's got a piece of the pie.
Carrie, what do you think?
That's a very interesting theory. I think he proved it. I think it's also random.
Okay, it's all and none at the same time. But promotion is by no means a small part of what happens here. Thanks for that. In Buffalo, Linda in Providence, Rhode Island. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. It's great to hear this show and to hear about movies. I really think you're letting Avatar off the hook. I feel like Avatar and The Blind Side are telling essentially the same story that white people keep telling themselves in America, that they're saving people of color over and over again. And
even if it's blue in the Na'vi's case.
Pardon me?
Even if it's the blue color.
Yes.
Even if they're blue. Yeah, because that was really a stand-in for Native Americans, or, you know, you could fill in the blanks. I think there's an instance in Avatar that's very telling. The Na'vi have just experienced a devastating massacre, and they're regrouping. And suddenly, our hero walks in with the avatar of a white woman saying,
yeah,
you've got to stop everything and save my friend. And they do. Like, they've lost parents and children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We don't disagree with you. That's very
outrageous instance of who's more important. And I think that it's time that we stop supporting these kinds of films and looked a little more critically at them. And that's all I have to say. I'm interested to hear your comments.
Well, thank you, Linda. It's interesting on that point, though, that this film has done gangbuster box office all around the world.
Yes.
It's not just in white America.
No.
Huge box office in China, for example. I found myself wondering, how are they watching this? What role do they see themselves in? Is this China in 2154, not actually white guys on a distant planet? You know, I mean, heck, we're practically scrapping NASA lately, it feels like, and they're trying to go to the moon. But what do you think of the critique, Wesley?
I have to say that was a moment in the movie where I really thought, just as a matter of storytelling, James Cameron could have finessed that sequence better, because, you know, you also remember that in addition to their homeland basically being destroyed, they also lost their leader.
Yeah.
And so
and their sacred life affirming.
Right. I mean, it's all very basically gone at this point. But I do sort of wonder, and I tried to argue with myself about why they would agree, because we already know at this point they're a very strong people. They're not easily bamboozled or led. And we know at this point that Jake Sully is indeed the chosen person meant to sort of like take them to the next place.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a moment I reckoned with myself my reconciliation was basically that it's Sigourney Weaver though.
So okay,
they brought
Ripley to them. They can't leave her dead.
Hey, you know, Linda raises The Blind Side in the same breath, and we haven't come there. But we've looked at Precious. The Blind Side stars famously Sandra Bullock as the white well-to-do Leanne Tui. She befriends a 17-year-old black football standout Michael Orr, played by Quentin Aaron. And Michael becomes part of the Tui family. He's then drafted into the NFL. Here's Sandra Bullock as Leanne with her friends, defending her decision to welcome the young black man into her home.
Look, here's the deal. I don't need y'all to approve my choices, all right? But I do ask that you respect them. You have no idea what this boy's been through, and if this is going to become some running diatribe, I can find an overpriced salad a lot closer to home.
Leanne, I'm so sorry. We didn't intend to...
No, we didn't, really.
I think what you're doing is so great. To open up your home to him, honey, you're changing that boy's life.
No. He's changing mine.
Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side. So, Carrie, Ricky, here's a funny kind of twist. I mean, it's the white mom telling her pals, don't be all up in my face here. What do you make of The Blind Side, Carrie?
This movie raises really fascinating questions, and it is the flip side of Precious. I mean, both Precious and The Blind Side are in part about the pathology of ghetto African-American lives, about the failure of educational institutions. I think that if there had been 10 more movies released this year about African-American life, there wouldn't be this anger towards The Blind Side and a little bit towards Precious for, so to speak, pathologizing African-American families. I have to say, where is Michael Oher in this movie? Mm-hmm. The actor who plays him is not given many lines, not given much to do, and is not really characterized. I think Bullock is fantastic. I've always liked Bullock. I think she can handle comedy. I think she can handle drama. I think there's a good chance that she'll win this year. But I thought the movie was incredibly imbalanced in the characterizations. And it's a feel-good movie. As Linda just pointed out, it makes white people feel good about saving people of color.
Wesley, how about The Blind Side? And then take us to all these Best Actress nominations. I mean, Sandra Bullock is up against Helen Mirren for The Last Station. Meryl Streep is in there. Of course, Gabrielle Sivide in Precious there. But first, the movie itself.
I mean, I agree with Carrie. I have two minds about this movie. In some ways, I think it's harmless. It tells a story we've experienced before. There's nothing in it that we haven't seen. But I also think that in 2010, a movie about a white woman who takes in a black kid and causes friction in her town is somewhat problematic only in the sense that the kid she takes in is completely whatever they want him to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear whether he likes football. Now, this is a guy, Michael Oher, who now is playing for the Baltimore Ravens.
For real, yeah.
He is an actual person. Mm-hmm. I refuse to believe that Michael Oher had such little agency in his own success,
mm-hmm.
And left it all to Leanne Toohey to make way for him
to become
the successful person.
Mm-hmm.
That said,
and I don't think Leanne Toohey had to teach him how to defend.
I don't think she had to teach him anything. Do you know what I mean?
But she gave him a hand. I mean, that's a historical, real life scenario.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Philip Drummond,
mm-hmm.
and then there's Different Strokes on the one hand, and then there's this sort of life-changing, you would be nothing were it not for me teaching you how to do all this stuff.
So stack up the actresses. We'll leave that with its question marks. But what about Sandra up against Streep, against Utah?
I think this is the best race. I mean, aside from what could happen, which is anything in the Best Picture race, I think this is the race that will be most interesting, mostly because you could make a case for and against the three people that I think have the best shot to win. And it's Meryl Streep and Julie and Julia. Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side and Gabby Sidibe in Precious.
Mm.
I think that, Meryl Streep is now the Susan Lucci of the Academy Award. She already has two Oscars, but
she hasn't won in 27 years.
And she's Meryl Streep.
But I think that the Academy now does not know what to give it to her for. Now, what does she have to do? What would we like to see Meryl Streep do to give what we consider the performance where we break this trend of nominating her for all these years and giving her nothing? And I just don't know if they think that playing Julia Child is going to be that thing. I don't know what it is at this point.
Carrie, what do you say on Best Actress?
I tend to agree with Wesley, but I also think there's a fourth possibility, which is Helen Mirren. But
In The Last Station, she was pretty great. I think she's fantastic.
I just don't think enough people saw it. I agree.
I do think it's a Bullock versus Streep race. The Academy tends to reward comics who play drama and dramatic actors who throw screwballs. They like that change of pace.
But Carrie, did you feel like this
Hold on. That advantages Bullock. However, the Academy also likes to give people awards for when they're overdue, and that advantages Streep. Now, mm-hmm. Wesley, sorry.
I'm just going to ask you, do you really feel like this Sandra Bullock performance is radically different from anything you've seen her do before? I just felt like
Is it still Miss Congeniality?
No, I do think...
No, it's not Miss Congeniality.
It's a tweak on some of her other comedic parts, I do think. I mean, she's not... The thing I like about this performance is she's not trying to win an Academy Award. It's understated enough... But I think that she has a lot of sort of sitcom-y punchlines, but she's playing a grown-up, and I think that's the eye-opening thing for a lot of people, too. She's playing somebody who's not falling down for our laughs.
Yeah. It's a very contained performance. She's not crazy and out of control and falling down, women mostly are in movies. I like the performance. I don't think it's as great as her performance as Harper Lee in Infamous, but I think she's really good.
Hey, Ryan in Augusta, Georgia. You're on the air, Ryan.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty well. What do you think?
I don't really understand your depiction of the movie, because it's a true movie. And if you watch the draft this last year, when Mr. Orr was drafted, his family was right there with him, and you got every impression that they were a true American family just as much as anyone else, that they were happy. And if you listen to Mr. Orr speak, you wouldn't get the feeling it was a white, feel-good environment that he was in. It was a realistic, true love between them.
I absolutely agree with you, Ryan. That was the pictures from the draft. I think the movie was very selective in what it chose, how it chose to tell the story. I don't believe the Michael Orr character was really had a character. He was just a gentle giant who didn't say much and who wasn't given much to do. And that I think that was a failure in the storytelling.
Major box office, though. Thanks for your call, Ryan. Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gary, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I would just like to ask your panel, what they thought of the Star Trek movie that came out. If they thought it deserved at least mention in the top 10, because I think a few months ago, Quentin Tarantino went on record as saying that he thought the Star Trek movie was the best movie of 2009. And, you know, as a fan of Star Trek, I understand that, you know, we naturally get the shaft a lot, but if this was the one chance for it to get mainstream respect, I thought this was it, and we didn't get it. So I just wanted to see what they thought.
Respect for Star Trek. Wesley, how about it?
I mean, you know, I will say I'm not surprised it did not get a Best Picture nomination. I do think in some ways that when people fill out their ballots,
it was sure a good time.
You mean the movie?
The movie.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
I think that in some ways Avatar and District 9 probably hurt that movie in some ways. I'm
District
sure
9
it came
sci-fi
in,
set in South Africa.
I'm sure it came in 11th or 12th. I mean, it was probably very close. But I will also say that the Academy's bias against science fiction is one thing. I think the Academy's bias against comedy is another. I think Chris Pine in that Star Trek movie is actually really great. I mean, if I had to pick, he would have made my top five actors list. I mean, he is really, really good in that movie.
Yeah, let's get a call from Nashville. Bruce. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hello, everybody. How y'all doing today?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Oh, not much. I just wanted to kind of point out an observation I've had with all these films is that they all, I think, give a very subtle undercurrent to the shifting of the way Americans are thinking about themselves and the rest of the world. If you look at Avatar, it's about our endless wants and how we marginalize and dehumanize people to get what we want, and how that eventually will cost us.
Mm-hmm.
And also you see the same thing in The Hurt Locker. When you pursue these kind of policies, how far off center of being human it pushes your own people. When you marginalize people, like the folks in Precious, what they're left to deal with having been marginalized. And then also in the one about the football player, it's the redeeming quality of finding humanity by reaching out to other people.
Bruce, I think you're onto something there. That really does feel like a thread in the films this year. Our time is short. Let me get one more. Mike in Providence, Rhode Island. Mike, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to mention something I think has been left out, which is A Serious Man, which I think out of all the movies is the most perfect movie. I think even The Hurt Locker, which I liked, had problems with the ending. But I think A Serious Man is like typical Coen Brothers perfection and really evoked a time and place. And
Absolutely. Coen Brothers back in the, Minneapolis suburb of their youth in a very Jewish-American community with a tough story and
Janis
a very human
Joplin.
Story. Yeah. Tough, but I mean, tough on box office. Didn't do a big performance there, but this is truly a very tightly knit Coen Brothers performance, Wesley, or film.
It is. I have found, and this is the sort of thing with Inglourious Basterds too, I think that the people who love this movie love it.
Mm-hmm.
They love it. I am not one of those people. I actually despise this movie.
It's a particular taste. There's no question
about
that.
It's a particular taste, but I also think that it's kind of a disturbing movie in a lot of ways. I mean, it's a movie about Jews who sort of don't like being Jewish. And I think that's
are fascinated with the neurosis or something.
As the Jew here, may I speak?
Yes, sure.
I think it's about again, as the caller said, marginalized people who mm-hmm. don't know where they are. But I also think it's about trying to find proof. This is a physicist who's mm-hmm. trying to find proof. And I think it's a very elegantly structured movie.
It's a Job story
movie.
In many ways.
Yeah.
And in that, but it's about, it's really, it's. It, I don't know, I'm not a physicist, but mm-hmm. it is about the Roringer's cat and Heisenberg theory. It's about way we find proof so we want to exist. And I think it's a very elegantly structured movie. And I enjoyed it. I don't know. I would defend it.
Defend on, and why not? I enjoyed it too, I have to say. We've only got 30 seconds, and we didn't get the best actor. I don't know, Bridges, Clooney, Firth?
It's Bridges because he's overdue. The
yes.
end.
Yeah.
Sentimental favorite for Crazy Heart. Did he earn it, Wesley?
I don't really like this movie. I mean, I like the performance fine. The movie is like neither here nor there. He will win because he hasn't won before. He's Jeff Bridges. It's like they don't know how they didn't give it to him for any number of other things. And I would be happy to see him win. I don't begrudge him his Oscar.
Clooney Up in the Air was a pretty cool cat, Carrie.
He was great.
He won. He's
not,
already won.
It's not his
yeah.
year.
Yeah,
it's
mean,
not
yeah.
his year.
All right. So strum on. It's the guy with the guitar. It's Jeff Bridges. And why not? Good guy. You are both so good for being with us this hour. We'll all be watching Sunday night and thinking back on your insights today. Carrie Rickey with the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Thank
in
you
Philly.
So much. And you've got great callers. You all said such
you
good stuff.
You bet we yeah. do. You bet we do. And Wesley Morris with the Boston Globe Film Critic. Thank you so much for being
thanks,
with us.
Thanks, Tom. Carrie.
Hey, thanks to everybody. Callers, thanks for being with us today. We go out with a little Hurt Locker music. We'll all be there Sunday night. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.